You're listening to the Pinball Podcast with Don and Jeff.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Pinball Podcast, episode 20 for the month of June 2013. My name is Don, and with me, as always, is Jeff. What's up, Jeff?
Not a whole lot. I was down in L.A. this week for E3, so I've seen a bunch of those video game things, but I'm not going to talk about those. It's nice to be talking back about pinball, where the world's just a little bit more sane. So
before you talk about pinball, we got a million questions about a picture you posted on our Facebook page. It was a picture of the pinball arcade running on a PS4.
Yep.
I want you to spill the beans. Everybody seemed to be foaming at the mouth for information on this thing, and you were pretty tight-lipped.
Yeah, I was pretty busy with some other stuff, but actually I learned a few things, aside from just how it works on the PS4. But just because, you know, I'm a committed man to pinball, the very first PlayStation 4 game I played was the Pinball Arcade. Nice. So first time touching the controller, anything to do with the console, it was Pinball Arcade. They had it limited to one table, which is Star Trek The Next Generation, which is a really good one on Pinball Arcade. So that was great for the show. They did say they have other tables totally completed and ready to go. They just, for E3, only had that one available to demo. It played really smooth, and what was nice about it is, I don't know, like sometimes when you're playing the Pinball Arcade, have you noticed that sometimes there will be little frame rate hiccups and stuff? It seems to happen, I wouldn't say all the time, but maybe at least once or twice per ball, you get a little kind of a hiccup. Mm-hmm. There was none of that at all. I mean, these machines are so insanely powerful compared to what we've had for the last few years that it was just totally smooth. The lighting was, you know, nice, like it is on, say, the PS3 or 360 version, so that looked really good. And apparently when I was talking to the Farsight guys, they said that the 360 version is actually the best playing version out of all of them, and it's also the one that has the best audio sync. So from a gameplay perspective and best sound, it's the 360. But this the PS4, he said, it gives them so much extra power to play with that it's going to be better. So when I played it, it felt about the same. It looked about the same. But it's so hard at E3 when you're 2 feet away from a 32-inch screen. Yeah. I mean, that's just not the conditions you're going to have at home. So it might have looked better. It might have, been sharper with some of the details. It was just really hard to tell in that environment. All I can say is it looked great, it played great, and it sounded, you know, just like it should. So I enjoyed it. I played it for quite a while, and I threw a high score up on the Grand Champion score on one of the kiosks. Yeah. So it was cool. It was fun.
I didn't notice, did they let you change the camera during the demo?
It was controllable if you wanted to, okay. Just like it is in all the others.
Okay, cool. Well, okay, so that's as much as we're going to get. I haven't seen it reported on anywhere else.
Yeah, and the other thing, as you said, is it will be ready for launch. It's up to Sony if they will have it out or not. But I said, if it's not available for launch, what are we looking at timetable-wise? And he said, oh, probably within 10 minutes of launch. So, I mean, that's probably an exaggeration, but essentially, everything's going to be ready, and all the tables are going to be good to go. And it sounds like in this next generation that the updates are going to be way more timely. Because Android and iOS now, they all get them day one. But it sounds like the PS3 and everything, I mean, PS4 and all that is going to be up to speed. So it should be good.
Cool. Any word on the Xbox One?
Is
it still caught in limbo?
The thing is, the Xbox team is still figuring how they're going to handle their partnerships out with all of these smaller publishers and indie devs. And right now, they still have a slotted release schedule. So PS4, indies can self-publish. Same thing with Wii U. Indies can publish when they want. But through the Xbox One and Xbox 360 now, they have slotted periods. That's kind of a release schedule that's controlled by Microsoft. So even after a game gets certified, it's ready to go, it's up to Microsoft when it's going to go live. And so it's right now they're at the mercy of that. Hopefully all the negative press that Microsoft's getting right now opens that up before launch, because man, I'm telling you, talking to developers, they are nothing short of pissed about the policies and stuff surrounding that.
Yeah, I actually think it makes more sense on Microsoft's side, because whenever a Xbox Live game hits, it's kind of a big deal for at least a week.
Yeah.
And you know it's there, whereas the PS3, so much stuff comes out. It might be 4 or 5 games come out a week, and you kind of forget about them over the months and don't ever touch them.
Yeah, strategically it makes more sense.
For
developers, though, it's really hard, because if you're a smaller developer, they're just going to keep bumping you and bumping you until they have a gap to fill. And a lot of times it's during non-ideal release schedules or something, or your little arcade game might be coming out the same day as Grand Theft Auto 5, and you have no chance of getting any sales. So things like that happen, and anyway, it's just different strategies. So
cool. Well, thanks for the report from E3. And no Jersey Jack there this year?
Nope, no Jersey Jack. The only other pinball I saw was Pinball Heroes for the Vita.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
It's
I saw you mentioned that. I loved it on the PSP.
Yeah.
I was a huge fan of Pinball Heroes, and I wish they'd done more. They only did 8 tables.
Right. It was the same.
Come to the Vita.
It was the same tables at E3. Okay. And, I mean, it was higher res. It looked sharper. Played the same, except for that you could turn it vertical and... you couldn't do that on the PC because you didn't have the touchscreen. And then use the touchscreen just like you do with, like, the smartphones or tablets. After getting, you know, heavy play on Zen Pinball and Pinball Arcade, the physics of Pinball Heroes just don't match up. It's still a fun little diversion, but I don't see myself peeling away from Zen or Farsight's products too often. So.
Yeah, well... Hopefully they'll discount it, bundle all 8 for $5 or something.
Yes.
I think you could turn it sideways where you would use the up and down buttons as your flippers.
Yeah, it was a little clunky, but being able to use the touchscreen now was pretty nice.
Cool. So, did you have any other pinball news from the last month? Personal stuff?
No. I mean, I already had the AC/DC last time, right?
Yeah.
So, no. No.
Okay, well, good enough.
What about you?
Pretty
exciting.
I got a couple things.
Okay.
We had EM Pinball ABQ, EM Pinball Albuquerque, had their very first open house last weekend, and they asked me to run the tournament. So we did. It was a little weird because I didn't know what machines, because I was running it, that's why it was weird. I didn't know what machines are going to be in it, and in an EM tournament, I didn't know if they were 1-player, 2-player, 4-player. You know, there's just... I kind of went in blind, but it worked out pretty well. I knew there was going to be an AC/DC there, so we did a 1-ball tournament on that. And then we used the rest of the EM machines. We just did a double elimination kind of... Or a single elimination kind of thing. So it actually worked out pretty well. They had about 25 games there, and they do a lot of repairs. And they had some repair machines there from customers that hadn't picked them up yet. And they got the okay to everybody to play those. And they had... I brought my Fast Break, a friend bought a giant mnemonic, there was an Attack from Mars there, and a Funhouse, and a Millionaire. I think those are all the solid-state games.
Nice.
But,
sounds like...
and X's and O's, that was the other one.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good mix of games.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, especially for Albuquerque. I think the last time I had a tournament, there was about 60 people, and there was probably, I'd say at least 40 this time for their initial open house, and... Went off really smooth. Everybody had a great time, and I'm looking forward to the next one. So, I'll put a link up.
I have to make the totally non-original. You hear every time you say Albuquerque joke is, boy, that meth money is really working for you guys, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not meth money. It's green chili.
No, what?
Green chili money.
I was gonna let that joke die, and we can edit it in post.
Nah, it'll be there.
Yeah, have you seen that? There's like a map of the country with all the biggest retailers from each state.
And that's Allsup's?
Allsup's, yeah.
Yeah.
Allsup's is a convenience store chain that I haven't been to in 20 years.
Yeah, so. I haven't either. But
I think Blue Meth probably has made more.
Well, ours was Sinclair, and I don't know if that is true or not, but...
At least people have heard of them. They have a cool logo.
Yeah, it's a dinosaur.
Yeah, it's awesome. I've got a Sinclair sign hanging up in my nursery.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll sign it for you.
Thanks. And because I have a podcast that deals with pinball. I'm going to pimp some games I have for sale.
Boom.
I'm selling my prototype CSI. I've talked about it before, but it's got a unique play field. The art, I can't find anywhere else on any other game. So I think it's the only one with this particular art package on the play field. The bullet is a different design, a little plastic bullet. There's a lot of different changes, and if anybody wants a rundown or pictures, just send us an email, pinballpodcast@gmail.com, and I would love to talk to you about it. So it is a prototype game, and the only thing I've changed is I added super bright LEDs in the inserts, just because I thought they were ugly, but there's been no irreversible changes from the prototype state.
Very nice.
Yeah. I'm also selling my T2 and my NBA Fast Break, which are both in pretty decent shape. So,
are there any mods or anything on those two, or are they pretty much stock?
The T2, I put in a red DMD lens just to change the color there, and that is it. Oh, I've got the big metal Skynet ship. It's kind of the weird Sharpie one. The seller gave me one, so I just threw it on there. And I did get plastic protectors I put on there.
Cool.
Yeah.
I dig.
So, yeah. It plays pretty well. It's a fun game. I hate to see it go, but my wife and I were talking, and if there's a game we don't love, and we just rather have the money available for when we find a game we do love.
Yeah.
So that's the way we're going.
I had a really hard time letting pinball machines go, and then I finally realized, you know what? If I've owned it and I sell it, it probably means that someone else owns it, and they'll be willing to sell it at some point. So yeah. I've kind of loosened my grip on stuff a little bit, but I am itchy because I really want my Simpsons Pinball Party and Lord of the Rings back. So eyes are open, so is my wallet. But yeah, I do want those machines back really, really badly. So I'm on the lookout.
Yeah, someday. People always ask when I sell games that I you know, they're good games. Whenever I sold good games, people are like, "Oh, why are you getting rid of it?" Well, you can't have them all, you know.
No. I mean,
it's kind of a revolving door thing. You play it for a couple of months, it's okay to share it with somebody else.
Well, if this podcast money keeps coming in like it is, we're going to be able to build bigger homes and get bigger collections. So
Yeah. So far, we're only in the negative couple $100.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Turn the corner any day now.
Yeah, for sure.
And at that EM pinball event, my buddy with the giant mnemonic, he actually took my fast break home with him, and I took his giant mnemonic home with me. So the kids have been going crazy the last couple of days. I've only played it a few times, but he had just waxed it. It plays really fast, and of course, Giant Mnemonic's a great game.
It's a fantastic game, yeah, for sure.
It was kind of funny that we both had Gomez games just randomly. It's the only Gomez game I've got, and the only one he's got.
Man, but I don't have a Gomez right now. I want that Lord of the Rings back.
Yeah.
So
anyway, so there's that. Moving on to the We F'd Up section.
Yes, we did.
A couple of mistakes. We didn't make as many mistakes, apparently. A lot of people said our last episode was really good, and I thought it was one of our worst episodes.
Well, maybe we effed up on the evaluation of that show, then.
Yeah. I just have poor taste, I guess. David Robinson pointed out that I was talking about the targets for the Hulk letters on Avengers, and how I wish they were kind of, they would pop up when you hit them, instead of going down into the playfield, just to get them out of the way. And he said they're similar to the Stargate Horus targets, which I didn't even think about. But yeah, they have targets in front of the loops. You hit the target moves up out of the way, and then you can shoot the loop.
Yeah, they're kind of cool how they work like that, too. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about that either when we were talking about it, so neat stuff.
And we talked about meeting Brian from South Africa up at the Denver show, and his name is actually Ryan, and he's from South Dakota, and he sent us a little list. He's a huge System 11 fan. He's investing in several early solid-state games and late solid-state pre-DMD games. So yeah. Anyway, Ryan, is great to meet you. Sorry, we're bad with names.
What was kind of cool about that is I'm kind of, I don't know as far as collection-wise goes, but lately my interest has been really in that pre-DMD earlier solid state as well. When we were out at Rocky Mountain Pinball Showdown, I put a lot of time into those. I noticed you were as well. It's just, I don't know, it's not like I'm going to run and sell all my DMDs and replace my collection, but just I've really come to appreciate them a lot more, and I'm just glad that they're around, that there are enough people who like them, that keep them in good shape and keep them floating around in the, you know, in the buying pool. So it's fun seeing them, and I like them a lot more now than I did when I first got into the hobby.
definitely. I think a big part of it was that a lot of them weren't kept in good shape, and now collectors are going for D&D games, so you don't see them as often in playable condition.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a real treat when you get to find them in good shape.
Yeah, they're fun.
Definitely. I'll let you kind of handle the contest. We talked about, tell us your buying rituals, what weird habits you have, any personal checklists you run through, and the prize was a Pinball Caddy winner, if you want to announce our winner.
Yeah.
Some of the highlights there.
I'll start with the highlights, and then talk about the winner. Okay, so most of our responses came through on Pinside, and a lot of people seem to have similar routines, but I'll just pull a few. This one actually is from Lloyd Olson. So he says, for new games, whether it's pickup or delivered, he uncrates it, sets it up, and then immediately he takes off the Playfield and Translite glass, and he goes through and looks for anything that came loose, it's broke, or it's missing. For me, I've done that before. It's really hard for me to do that, but the tech guy, he's smart to do that. Anyway, then first thing he does, he cleans and whacks easy to get to areas on the playfield, puts in clean balls and installs. He cleans the balls and then installs them again. Sets the game where it's going to be level and sets the tilt, powers it up. If it's all good, makes any adjustments he needs to make, and then plays a ball if everything is working. He turns it off, and then he turns it on and throws a game on and lets the customer play the first game on the new machine. So, kind of cool from an operator's perspective. It's his business, you know, and it's smart for him to check to make sure there's no loose or things that might be missing from a new machine, because he's got to get those things making money right away. And I've actually, in arcade machines, not checked that before, and I've had a screw that's fallen down and shorted some stuff out on a board. So it can happen just as easy with a pinball machine. So probably a smart idea to do that.
That'd be tough.
Yeah, and then this is Robert Cecil, one of our regular listeners. He says that he seems to only be buying new pins these days. So he does a standard checking, looks for loose assemblies or connectors, does his own quality control to check, and then installs Cliffies or any other protectors before the first play. Then he lets the kids go crazy on it. So pretty fun there. A lot of people are putting in Cliffies before the first play. You can see those in Craigslist and eBay listings, but we're going to talk more about that later. Jester Funhouse, I won't read his whole thing, but I just wanted to pull one thing. He says, the best part about picking up a new machine is the people I meet. The last pickup, I spent an hour and a half talking with the guy about pinball and the machine. He was retiring and moving to Florida, and the machines he had been his babies for the last 10 years, so he wanted to tell me the repair and upgrade history, which I was happy to learn. I always like hearing about that. I've had similar experiences where you pick up a machine and you talk to the guy for way longer than it took you to drive out there and drive back, but it's always fun hearing people's stories about their machines. I know sometimes some people are just eager to, you know, get the machine gone, and it's kind of a quick transaction, but a couple more I'll read, and then I'll announce our winner. One guy, actually, I can't really read it, but he posted a picture of his companion that goes along, and it's a big dog and barely fits in the front seat of his car. It's actually a pretty funny picture. We'll link to this thread so you guys can read all of the responses we got. But let me do two more, and then... Okay, this is Nunjo Business. He says, I buy most early solid-state games. When they first come home, they go in the garage bay where my car belongs. I hate having my car in the driveway, so that ensures I'll get around to having the game done ASAP. First order of business is cleaning. I get the head off and empty the cabinet and use a bunch of Mean Green to get all the yellow crud off. The legs go in the sink and get scrubbed with steel wool and waxed with Noxon? I don't know that.
Noxon. Yeah, I use that.
Or replaced if they're too disgusting. I almost always replace the feet. The machine goes from the garage to the basement in pieces. That way I can do the work myself. I remove everything protruding from the playfield. All metal parts go into the tumbler. Plastic parts go into an ultrasonic cleaner. If the coin door really disgusts me, it gets disassembled and cleaned. I take a million or so pictures while I tear down so I can remember how it goes, what screw goes in which hole. I initially clean with the damp cloth, then Novus 2, then wax with Mother's Carnauba wax. Reassemble the playfield, replace all rubber ring with a new set, sometimes replace the acorns. I replace all the coil sleeves and clean out the playfield at this time. So this guy, like, goes all out.
When he does this with every game?
Yeah. Yeah, and then he says, I also give the under playfield a good inspection for previous hacks. When it's time to hit the power, I normally grab a beer. I find that part to be nerve-wracking. I found that I'm much more efficient in assembling pinball machines than the manufacturers. I often have extra parts and I'm done. I place extra parts in a Ziploc bag in the cabinet and wait for the day when I remember where they go.
Nice.
I almost always have extra stuff left over.
Yeah, so I've been in that same boat.
I know what that is. so last one from Chippewa Pin. He says, almost every pin I have bought over the years is at least half an hour away, usually 3 to 5 hours away. So I prep my pin hauler, get the escape ready, bring blankets, cardboard, plastic wrap, and a socket set. Then he says, my 8-year-old son has gone on almost every trip with me. We pack two of the following: water bottles, fruit snacks, fruit cups, cheese and cracker packages, and a stop for one meal at a rest stop and look for more pins. And then at home, I get the hydraulic lift with him riding on it, of course, unload it, set it up. We call mom down. She gets the first game. Oh, he gets the first game, the son. Wife and the 2.5-year-old daughter feign interest and then leave. I get the second game. The playfield is then stripped bare, everything clean, re-rubbered, and put back together. So, a lot of fun little stories. The people who talk about they let the kids or the wife play first, keep doing that. That's a very good idea. But our winner of the Pin Gulp caddy, the foldable one, is Terry from Pinball Life.
Nice. Yes.
I'm just kidding about that. It's SKB on Pinside, and I haven't contacted him yet, so I'm assuming he'll accept it, but you can read his story on Pinside. But yeah, he is our winner, so fun one times.
One other one I wanted to point out was we got an email from a listener named John, and he talked about fully shopping a game when he gets at home. I don't fully shop them, but he said that it helps him get familiar with the game, and you never know what areas are dirty and whatnot. I do that. Usually the day after I get a game, I like to kind of just start tinkering underneath to find all the different areas that I don't know about, mechanisms I'm not familiar with, or just kind of see loose wires and this and that. I like to go through it with a fine-tooth comb the day after, but I don't know about fully shopping a game if it doesn't need it.
Yeah, depending on the condition of the machine, I do like to do quite a bit of work on them right when I get them, but cool. Lately I haven't been as aggressive as I used to be on the shopping.
Yeah. So thank you guys for participating and letting us know how you bring home your games. We actually have a pretty cool giveaway this month. Mike over at DK Pinball donated 4 of the new FTS-8 power splitter boards. And, oh, I shouldn't have said the number, because now we can't steal them.
Yeah.
Well, we might do a test run on a couple, just to make sure they're up to snuff for giveaways. Anyway, it's basically like a little tap you can put in your game, so you can add all kinds of different mods without, having wires going crazy and this way and that. So, he started a thread on Pinside about it, and I'll put a link to that. Also put a link to the product up on our site, and you can get them at Pinball Life. Again, it's the FTS-8 Power Splitter Board. And to enter, you'll just need to email us at pinballpodcast@gmail.com with your dream mod. Just tell us a mod that it may or may not exist, but you'd love to see one in action. A recent one that I saw mentioned was the Metallica Ninja Star logo, having those kind of spinning in the back where Sparky's sitting, or where the speakers are at, or whatever. So,
yeah, you know what I would like? I'd like a mod for fishtails that would make it fun.
Yeah, I had a feeling something like that was coming. Did you ever see that Aqua Teen Hunger Force where Master Shake got his own pinball machine?
No.
It had like 18 flipper buttons on it. And he turned the tilt off and he ended up flipping the whole game over. It was pretty good.
Haven't seen that one.
No, it's an obscure, or not an obscure show, but I don't know. Some people either love it or hate it kind of show.
It's funny. I think it's
funny. Got a kick out of that. And... okay, so we're done with the contest.
Yes, we are.
That's the end of the show, I think, right?
It should be. It's all downhill from here.
Yeah. There's almost no news. I think because we had all the conventions and stuff going on, everybody's on vacation. But Color DMD did announce that they're doing Scared Stiff as their next DMD, which is pretty cool. That's a good one.
Yeah, I think that's a great one. I mean, a lot of people were guessing different games simply based on production number, but... the animations on this game beg for color, so it's a good choice.
Yeah, Anything with humans, like I noticed Q on Star Trek The Next Generation looked really good because he had like different skin tones, you know, under his eyes or around his cheeks or whatever. And this one's got a lot of Elvira on it, of course. So
she's got plenty of skin to show.
She does have skin, yes. So yeah, it's not a bad one. It seems like a game that maybe there's not as many out there, but that's okay. They've been cranking them out pretty quick. I mean, it was, what, 2 months ago Whitewater came out?
Yeah, I mean, they're rolling out a lot faster. Obviously, the new platform seems to be speeding things up, so
yeah,
nice to see.
Kind of, in the back of my head, I'm trying to think of what games I'd want to see them on. It's easy to say something like The Simpsons, because it's a mod-heavy kind of game, but really, like, you don't need that many colors on there. Yeah. It's already orange, and they're already yellow, so.
Yeah. For sure.
Anyway, for sure.
For sure.
All right, upcoming events. There's not a whole lot. California Extreme is July 13th and 14th out in Santa Clara, California. And that's a big one I've always wanted to go to. I've heard there's just tons of games, and they have a couple of the oddball games there, like the Addams Family that runs off of a exercise bike.
Yeah, that shows up every year.
Yeah, some of the weirder ones. And there was, I think there was a Kingpin there pretty consistently. I don't know. I've never been. It seems like a great one to go to. I wish it was a little further south so I could, you know, do Disneyland and California Extreme in one trip.
Yeah, I really want to go out to this. I was planning on it this year. Just stuff didn't line up to make it all that possible for me. But I've really wanted to go out to this show for a long time because I started out with arcade collecting. And it used to be pure arcade with a few pinball machines. And now it's you know, it's still the main focus is arcade cabinets, but there's a lot more of a pinball presence than there ever used to be. So it's a lot of fun if you even are just mostly interested in pinball. But there's also, on the arcade side, a lot of weird, rare prototype-type stuff or non-production games. So it's just a really cool show.
I think they had a game list. Let me see if it's up to date. Yep, it's up to date. And there are a zillion games on here. There's probably over 100 pinball machines, maybe 200. And probably twice as many arcade cabinets.
Yeah, really cool show.
Looks awesome. It looks gigantic, too.
It is.
But anyway, you can check it out. caextreme.org is the website. And we'll post a link to that one as well.
Yes. All right?
And then do-do-do. Huh? Yeah.
Bumper music.
Yes, okay. We'll go into our featured five. We're doing something a little different. We're going to talk about our five annoying, silly sales tactics and annoyances on eBay and Craigslist.
Yeah, stuff like where people hijack a podcast to talk about their wares.
Yeah, that's irritating.
No, yeah. Everyone loves to complain about the weird seller. Not a day goes by without threads on RGP and Binside talking about seller doing this or seller doing that. So we might as well just talk about the five that we just really can't stand, right?
Yeah, there's always something to complain about. Mostly it's when somebody else gets the game you're gunning for. That's the most annoying thing.
That is.
I don't blame the seller for that, though. All right, you want to start the ball rolling?
Yeah, and I think the first one is... Now, I mean, there's times when some of these tactics are actually okay. It's the misuse of some of these tactics that are the annoying thing. So I want to clear that up to kind of cover our backs a little bit so we don't anger everybody out there that's ever sold a pinball machine. So my first one is the all capitals surrounded in exclamation points and yeah, squiggly lines that says,
"Look,
rare, look, rare." And you click on it and it's an Addams Family. And, well, if they're anything but rare. And then you'll actually read into the description, it's like, only 20,000 of these were ever made. And like, well, yeah, that's not exactly a limited number compared to most other machines. But the call out of these being exceedingly rare always is kind of funny to me because first, people in the know it's not rare. So they're going to disregard that. And then if someone is looking to buy a pinball machine that's not experienced in pinball, I would guess that they wouldn't want to buy a rare, one-of-a-kind, hard-to-get item because it's their first time. I mean, if you're just getting into a hobby, you don't go buy the most unknown object. So it's a silly tactic, and it seems to be on about 70% of the eBay listings, whether the game's actually rare or not. So save it for Loch Ness Monster, please.
This was actually in my top five. An example I had is I went with a friend to pick up a High Speed, and we got there and like, oh yeah, this is, you know, really hard to find. It's really rare. They just didn't make very many of these. And my buddy and I, he's a pinball guy too. We were looking at each other like, well, they made a little over 17,000, which is one of the highest production games of all time. But the price was right, so we picked it up.
Yeah, probably because it was rare. And you know,
it was rare. Yeah, I think he talked them down, but they took it. But it was they had bought it for their daughter, and I think she was like 16 or 17. She's in high school, so she just took the cash. She just, yeah, that's fine, I'll take it. So it's nice. You having a seller as a kid is awesome.
Oh yeah, you can take advantage of them easy. They're not smart. They're pretty easy. They're pretty dumb.
Yeah. All right. One of mine was when they say just needs this or that, and they have no idea what it needs. just probably just a fuse. You know. Yeah. Just needs a new rubbers. Just needs a new ball. Needs a new flipper.
A few minutes by an experienced pinballer could get this running just as good as new.
Yeah. Meanwhile, they haven't had it working in 20 years. Yeah. Well, if it's just needs this or that, why haven't you fixed it? You can sell it for two or three times as much.
Yep.
Just, it worked.
Yeah. A few bulbs out, but doesn't turn on. Other than that, seems okay.
Yeah. Just needs a new board set. It's easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I see those in every broken machine. It's never a project anymore. It's always just needs a little bit of love.
Yeah, it's usually in the fine print where people are trying to be honest but still want to make the sale.
Yeah. Oh. All right. My next one is the my loss is your gain type of statements. If you're selling it for a bad deal for yourself, that's nobody's fault but your own. Don't make me feel guilty for buying your machine at a good price if you're going to list it at that price. And I understand that you're losing a pinball machine out of your house, but you're also going to be picking up at least a couple grand. I think that your grief will be it'll be over pretty quickly. But some of them are pretty funny too. Like a specific example of one I saw was for a Simpsons pinball party, and I'm again looking for it, but one of them was they're selling it for like 6 grand, so ridiculous price to begin with. But then it just says, this is my favorite pinball machine I've ever owned, and I've had it in my basement for so many years, but due to the circumstances, I'm gonna have to let it go, and my loss is your gain. Well, no, I mean, at 6 grand, I think just about anybody's gonna let their Simpsons pinball party go.
We're both losing.
Yeah, it wasn't even a home use machine. It had been routed. So anyway, those sort of statements get me.
Yeah, that's definitely a Craigslist thing. Comes up now and then.
Yeah.
One of mine is when they say these go for $5,000 online, but I'll let it go for $2,000.
Yeah.
And it ends up being worth like $200.
Exactly.
And it's like a beat up EM with flaked back glass and three legs. So you get over there. Oh, I can give you $200. I remember a guy was selling a Kiss, and it was a friend of my dad. So I was like, okay, I'll go check it out. So I go over to his house, and it's in the garage, but it's like just buried under everything. So we kind of crawl over there, and can you turn it on or something? Can I at least see it turn on? Okay, fine. So he runs an extension cord through his house into his garage, plugs it in. It does turn on. So, okay. So then I take some stuff off the glass, and it looks like somebody put a hatchet right through the play field. There's like this huge valley just planking right down the middle. I was like, I'll give you $200 just to get it out of here, because the glass and the body look pretty nice. He's like, oh, I can't let it go for $3. I said, okay, you can keep it then. I wasn't going to bend, but he wasn't going to bend either. I was surprised.
Yeah.
Probably would have taken me 2 hours just to get it out of there.
But they go for that online.
Yeah, I know. They go for that online, yeah. If it's worth $5,000, why are you selling it for $2?
I know. And
somebody to sell it for 10% online, you'll still make $4,500.
Yeah, in the year 2013, you really should know how to list things online anyway, so.
Whatever.
Get it out there.
I found out later he sold it to a friend of mine for $400.
Wow.
So, good on him.
Yeah. a future project, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, then, my next one, and this one is all the stuff that can be wrong with pictures. Either they don't put pictures and they say contact for pictures. So if you're saying that, then you're like, okay, I have pictures. I just can't be bothered to take 30 seconds to upload them. So email me and I'll send them to you.
Yeah, at least throw a couple up there and say, contact me for more pictures. You don't want to throw up 45 pictures or something.
Or I don't even understand how people take pictures that are such low res that they're in thumbnail size a blurry mess. It's like, what are they using to take the picture?
That's
camera?
Exactly what mine says. My number two was Vaseline lens / thumbnail pics.
What
camera? You can't even zoom in to see what it is.
I mean, seriously, I think like they're taking a picture that looks fine. They're going into Photoshop, changing the resolution to like 1 dpi, and then shrinking it down to this itty bitty thing, and then saying that looks perfect, and then they'll upload it. So
either,
I don't know.
They're either taking the picture at the smallest resolution that their camera can do so they can fit more pictures on it, or they're just pulling thumbnails off of a Google image search.
Yeah, something like that. And then, right there, you lead into my next one, is that they use either stock photos or photos from Google Image. I've seen listings for sale locally and online that are my pictures. So I was like, I'll email and say, is that the picture of the game? And like, yeah, it's a beautiful game. And then I email back and say, well, yeah, that is a beautiful game. I know that because it's mine, or I owned that. That's my picture.
It's in my house right now.
And so I know that can't be the one you're selling. And then they'll go, oh, no. What I meant to say, it's representative of the actual machine. They look identical to this. And like, man, if you're going to put a picture up of another machine and just say it looks like this, take the extra 10 seconds and take your own picture and put it up. So, there's all other things you can complain about pictures. Pictures that are like from 40 feet away from the pinball machine, or you get a picture that's like extremely tight on a really dumb area. I mean, just whatever. There's all sorts of crazy shenanigans with the pictures out there.
So. Yeah, it's a giant picture of a 93 Dodge Neon with a pinball machine behind it. Yeah. You can kind of see the head popping out.
Yeah, and like you've got those eBay pictures where you've got a girl sitting on the machine. It's like, well, that's nice, but I want to see the whole machine. So,
I don't know. I kind of like those ones.
That's because you're not buying. You're just...
I'm okay with that. Yeah, I'm just viewing. I noticed that a Spanish Eyes just went up on eBay, or just sold, and it had quite a few bids, and maybe like a dozen bids or whatever. So, I don't know, I like Spanish Eyes. So I clicked through it, and somebody had painted the cabinet. It's like, okay, well then they obviously, somebody was messing with it at some point. There was as many pictures as eBay would allow, was in the description, but all of them looked like there was Vaseline on the lens. Like he was taking a picture straight into the sun with the machine kind of in front of him.
Yeah,
that's pretty bad.
That's great. Or sometimes you even get the finger that's in front of the lens a little bit. Like that's, just take a second picture. It's digital. It's not gonna hurt you.
I can see listing stuff and you don't take any pictures. At least then you got to click through and kind of read the description. I'm okay with that. Sometimes you're in a hurry. You just want to get it up. And then after work, maybe you'll add pictures if you get any bites. We've all been there too. But if you're going to throw pictures up, at least just take a good picture.
Yeah, for sure. That would be appreciable.
Yes. Okay, my number one, we kind of already burned through two of my other ones, but my number one annoyance bugs the hell out of me is when they don't reply to your emails and they just keep reposting it for months on end. It's like, how many emails do I have to send you? Yes, I'm interested. You know, please contact me. There's a local guy who's selling a bunch of parts. I emailed him twice. He posted it again two more times today. I'm like, well, you're trying to sell it. I'm trying to give you my money.
Yeah, the relist.
The relist, yeah. And there's another guy, when I was selling my Arabian Nights, there's been a guy for the last 3 years posting that he wants to buy a Totan. And, you know, want to buy a Totan. So I emailed that guy months before I even offered it to anybody else. He never emailed me back. Like, I have a nice Totan. I don't understand. He posted it this week. He's still looking for one. He's never seen mine.
Then there's the people who, like, every day will delete their ad and then relist. So it's constantly on top. Or they don't delete the old one. They just relist. So you have five versions of the same ad in there. So.
I've talked about this guy before. He's got the Waterworld Geez, I don't even remember anymore. He's got Waterworld, Black Rose, and something else. Anyway, a whirlwind. He's been listening to them for years and years. $3,000 each. Take your pick. He listed it twice today within 5 minutes of each other. So I checked to see, well, maybe he changed the category or something. But no, same category. I don't get it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, man. All day
whatever.
Long.
Whatever, anyway. Do you have any more?
I do. And this one, I understand why they say it, but it's slightly, I think it's, I don't know, I get what they're trying to do, but where they say home use only for X number of years. Now, they're not saying it's a home use only game, they're saying it's been home use only for X number of years. Well, yeah, I mean, in the last 10, 15 years, most games moved off route and went into the home, so most games have been home use only for the last 10 to 15 years. The thing that I don't like about this is it doesn't really speak anything at all to condition. It just says it's like every other pinball machine that got taken off route. If it's something like, if you're going to say, hey, it was on route for a very short period of time and then it's been home use only since, maybe that makes a little bit more sense. But just the whole, hey, it's been home use only for X number of years does not say anything to me. And I think what it's doing, it's tripping people up, maybe thinking, oh, that's a home use only game. Like, it's a way of making them kind of think that. So that one kind of irritates me. And to go along with that, it's similar, just kind of the stuff like, been in storage for 20 years. Like, well, okay, it hasn't been played, but it hasn't been maintained for 20 years either. My OXO technically is a home use only game, but it was stored in a shed for over 20 years and rats got into it. So yeah, it's a home use only game, but because it was stored for 20 plus years, it has issues. So that one's that kind of just irritates me. That one's a little bit less harmful than some of the others, but
yeah, I was just gonna say that me personally, it doesn't really bother me if they say it's been home use only for 12 years. Okay, well, at least it's been out of drunk frat guy's way for 12 years, so generally I'll throw him a bone. Okay, well, it's got to be a little better than it was sitting at a college fraternity for the last 15 years. Storage, I don't like, just for the reason you pointed out. Yeah. You never know what happened while it was in storage, and they don't know either because it's been in storage. You know, somebody could be building a nest in there, or it could be get water damage or rusted. So.
Yep, exactly. So, again, I'm just saying, it's words that sound flowery and appealing, but they don't actually tell you anything about the game. So.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn. That's all right. Crankiness.
I had an honorable mention, since half of mine got reused anyway.
Okay.
And I hate bidding wars. It doesn't so much go into the listing. When you call on a game, you're selling the game for $1,000. Okay, I'll be there in an hour. You get there and the game's gone because he sold to somebody else for $1,100.
Uh-huh.
Or $1,025 or whatever. Well, the guy was here, he had cash. Well, yeah, but so did I. We had a deal. I would have given you an extra $25 if that's all it took.
Yep.
I hate that.
I've had deals drop out on me for that. And you know what? I actually didn't mention one of mine. I only mentioned four.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I just realized it. The contact for price. Just give us a price. You know what you'll let it go for. If you feel like that's too much, it's still going to be too much when they call you and you want $4,500 for your No Fear. Sorry, you're not going to sell it for that. If that's what it's going to take to get it out of the door, just put it in your listing. There might be some crazy collector that just wants that game and right in that moment, and they'll pay it. But you're wasting a lot of people's time and your own because you have to field all these phone calls where people are like, nope, screw it, I'm not paying that. Just give us the... And it doesn't have to be the lowest you'll accept. Just give us your range, and then let the haggling start from there.
Yeah, I'm totally okay with sellers using the words OBO, or best offer, and firm. If it's $500 firm, okay, then I won't haggle you on it. If it's not worth it, I can walk away. If it's $500 OBO, and it's a $200 game, I can offer you $200. There's no rules.
Yeah.
You don't have to take it.
Exactly.
But at least throw a number out there. A $500 game and a $5,000 game are two different things, but sometimes, you know, sellers, they don't understand that.
Right.
Not all sellers, anyway.
And
pinball machine's a luxury item, right?
Yeah, and I can understand retailers wanting you to contact them for price because there are some times where they can't give prices over, you know, certain ways. Or their prices might just change. But if we're talking collector to collector, just come on, give me the price. What's it going to take?
And you just brought up something good for new collectors to know, is that a lot of times new in-box games, the manufacturers don't allow them to list sale prices.
Right.
Like even, Target coupon might say, 10% off, but it won't tell you what the price is, or $5 off, but it won't say, a $7.99 pack of Huggies, because the pack might be $9.99 by the time you get there.
Yep.
So, yeah, call a distributor, and if you're looking for a new in-box game, it's okay to call them and not, necessarily use the MSRP as your bottom line.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And can we do something? Can we set a standard in the community right here, right now?
Yeah, of course. We set all the standards.
What category do we list pinball machines in on Craigslist?
Video games.
Video games? I usually list them in toys.
Now, I don't know. Like, Craigslist just is... It's hard, because sometimes it's like... I've seen it in furniture. I've seen them in...
household items right household now. We have a police force in household items.
Yeah, if Craigslist has one major failing, it's their categorization. So.
Yeah, it's too broad.
No, I don't know. I just made up video games. I have no idea on that. eBay, it's easy. They have a pinball machines category, but...
I'm just looking right now. There's not a single machine in Albuquerque in video games besides, Wii games and stuff that are popping up under pinball. But it looks like most people are using toys and games, household items, general by owner, antiques. Let's nail it down right here. Let's get the word out. Collectibles is on there as well. Let's just go, I don't know. Again, I like toys and games. It's a pinball game. It's kind of a big toy. They're not necessarily collectibles if you're putting them on route.
Right.
If you're an operator. It's not necessarily an antique if it's a 10-year-old Simpsons.
Yeah, I don't know. Toys and games seems to be the most probably likely one to pick, I would say. I don't know.
Okay. Our standard, bam, toys and games. Let's get everybody on the same page.
Exactly. Yep.
All the collectors using toys and games.
If you don't do it, you're an idiot.
Well, and most people have apps and stuff that'll, beep when a pinball machine comes up or whatever.
Yeah.
But my phone, I turned the app off because it was beeping constantly because they relist it in five different categories. Yeah, I didn't realize you can't help that, but yeah. Craigslist has got to do something.
For sure. So don't be an idiot. Follow the standards.
There you go. All right, anything else to add to our weird oddball top five?
No, we were pretty cranky there, so...
That's okay.
Let's get positive for a little bit.
I like to be cranky. Yeah, we've actually got a featured machine this month that I think we both really like.
Yes.
We spent some time in Denver last week playing Fishtails, and we had a change of heart, so we're going to redo Fishtails. No, of course that didn't.
No. Avengers.
No. Although Avengers, I could see giving that a second shake.
I'm willing to come back to it at some point, yes.
Yes.
But that's not the machine.
No. Actually, it's one of my all-time favorite machines by a great designer. We're going to review Congo.
Boom.
Congo. Boom. Boom. Congo is a John Trudeau game. Let me pull up my little dingle hopper here. Came out in 1995. You got art by Kevin O'Connor. Who's an awesome artist.
Yeah, the art's good on this game, I think.
The art's awesome. I actually really like the music, even though it's like a jungle theme, but the name is Congo. A lot of people knock it for the music, but I think the music totally fits. The voice call-outs are awesome. It's got custom speech from Ernie Hudson and Tim Curry.
Yep.
Pretty sweet. They made about... There's a confirmed number, 2,129 units were made. So it doesn't pop up a whole lot, but this is a dog movie, so it's not that sought after. It's kind of just starting to gain respect.
It is, and it's kind of like about 3 or 4 years ago, Bram Stoker's Dracula started going through that, and you kind of see it happening with Congo in kind of the same way, where the players have really picked it up because a lot of the other machines are just out of their price ranges. They're getting this. They're finding out that has a cool rule set, has cool art. It's just fun. So, yeah, it's happening.
I think John Trudeau pointed out that he actually thinks the game is better than the movie. And I agree.
Definitely.
I rewatched the movie about 2 years ago when I bought mine, and it was terrible.
So bad. It's
Bram Stoker. Dracula was a much better film.
Yeah, the book is fine. The book,
Congo, book was all right.
Not bad. Just good kind of when you're going on a trip type of read. But yeah, the movie's terrible. I remember being so disappointed in it.
Yeah. It's got a ton of toys too. Like, this thing has some huge toys. This would definitely be an LE game if it came out now, despite the oddball theme.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite is there's a giant volcano in the back that it erupts balls. Like, that's the ball lock, and then during multi-ball and during other modes, yeah, the balls shoot out of the top of the volcano and kind of pour down the side. It's
so
awesome.
Yeah, so cool.
Another one has got a mini playfield underneath.
Yep.
A la AC/DC.
Yeah, and it's one of those that it hits back towards the player. I always like when they do that. Uh-huh. And it's the same shape window as Creature from the Black Lagoon. In fact, the lenses are interchangeable, but...
Mm-hmm. If you want seaweed and fish on yours.
Yeah, if you do. Or you can get the green one without any decals on it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's got the gorilla that knocks the ball up towards the stand-up targets, and you're spelling Congo in there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's no flippers. You're actually using the flipper buttons to control the arms on a gorilla, and he punches the ball.
Yeah. Kind of hits it with his wrist.
Yeah, yeah. That gorilla was designed by Stan Winston, who he designed the Predator. He did the Terminator T-800 model.
He's
done a ton of stuff. But.
Yeah, it's supposed to be one of those crazy silverbacks, right? Is it Silverback Attack? Is that the mode? Or is that... There's a different mode. Is there some? There's some silverback mode in the game, but it's not the under playfield one, is it?
No. That's it's Gorilla Attack, isn't it?
Gorilla Attack. Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm gonna have to pull up the rule sheet now.
Oh man.
I sold mine a couple months ago.
Yeah.
So you spell gray to kind of start that mode, and it's got like I don't know, just a post that holds the ball, so you can focus on the lower playfield, which is actually super reliable. Like, a lot of games, I think Champion Pub was one where when the ball is supposed to kind of lock, it doesn't always work. So the lights are off. You're supposed to be focusing somewhere else, and then meanwhile the ball's floating around. Congo, I've never had that problem.
Yeah. One thing I was going to mention before we kind of get into rules and play a little bit, we touched on how the art's great on this. One thing I really, really appreciate is it's not... So the Translite is a little bit, but for the most part they just didn't use the film production art. The mm-hmm. back box side has the gorilla face from the movie poster, but the playfield, the sides of the cabinet are completely unique for the game, and even the Translite is still hand-drawn art, but it's mm-hmm. got the, you know, character likenesses from the film. If you didn't know of the film, you wouldn't guess that this came from a movie, aside from little Paramount logos there on the side of the back box. It just looks like it was, you know, if you walked up to it, like I said, you'd probably just think, oh, it's a jungle-themed game. It's about the Congo, whatever. You'd have no idea about the film. And I think that's great that they did that. They don't quite get away with that nowadays, the way the licenses work. So it's kind of around a time before things are really going to change with that. So one thing I really appreciated with that game, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's if you put in the custom eBay translate too, it's totally different than the movie.
Yeah. Then you got pretty much nothing from the movie.
Yeah, except for the callouts. Right. A lot of them probably won't make sense if you haven't seen the film, because Tim Curry's got kind of an oddball accent.
Oh yeah, I guess so. And you're like, who's Amy?
Yeah, that's true. Amy talking to you. Well, that's another cool ramp, the Amy ramp.
Yeah.
There's a Amy is the name of a gorilla who. I don't know if you've seen the movie. I don't know how much to get into this, but she's got a bracelet that lets her talk in English, which is kind of dumb. But anyway, she'll the ball has the ability to shoot into one of her hands, rolls across her chest, and pops out of her other hand.
Yep.
Really kinda cool. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So, all right, well, let's talk about this game as far as the way it plays. We talked about a little bit of the features. What do you think? Like, this game, I don't know if it's optical illusion or what, but you walk up to it, it looks steep. It looks steeper than another game. Is it deeper down in the playfield because of the stuff in the back?
Volcano? Or,
yeah.
You're right, it does look deep, but I don't think it is.
Okay, it's just whenever I've walked up to it, I'm like, man, this looks steep. And I know it's not. I know it's the same as others. Maybe it's just some weird optical illusion by the way the ramps are stacked or whatever. But so when you walk up to it, immediately it just kind of feels different. Just things look like nothing you've really ever seen. It's such a unique layout. And it looks like it's going to be one of those kind of real slower kind of deliberate shooters games, but the game's actually pretty fast.
Yeah, it's got a lot of opportunities for flow.
Yeah. Without being designed purely around flow, like return to flipper shots all over the place, mm-hmm. it plays way faster than most that don't do that. So that's one thing that I think is a reason it's getting really popular, is it's kind of this strange hybrid of stop and go with, you know, speed. It's pretty cool.
I think something that makes it look kind of bigger is that it's got a stunted shooter lane. The shooter lane only goes up like a foot or so and then cuts across the playfield.
Mm-hmm, for the skill shot.
Yeah, so it just gets kind of just past the slingshot before it enters the game. So the rest of the playfield doesn't need to house the shooter lane.
Right.
A lot of people don't like that when the ball shoots across the center of the playfield. But this has one of my favorite secret skill shots, in where you'll launch the ball, and if it drains out the left out lane, it automatically has a kickback in it, so it kicks the ball back into play, and you get 25 million.
Yeah,
it's like really a super cool. Secret skill shot. Yeah, it's a tough shot to make usually too, but very satisfying when you nail it. My wife played Congo in the women's tournament up in Denver, and mm-hmm. I told her about that. Don't forget the secret skill shot right before she played, and she nailed it, and she ended up winning. So
really cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
All right, so what are some other things, you having owned it, what are some of your favorite kind of features or things on it?
The custom speech is one of my favorite. It's a very bright play field, lots of different colors, and kind of lots of different shots. There are posts in it, but there's two saucers, there's two ramps, there's two, in a way, there's two whole separate loops, because the hippo loop, sometimes you'll nail it through the back of a hippo loop. It'll come back around to the pops. But and you have the mini playfield on the bottom, and you have one of the diverters up by the upper lanes can shoot either backwards into Amy's hand or forward into the, I don't know, what are those called? It's kind of like the wire rail ramp system, which that also splits, so it can shoot to the right or left flipper.
Yeah.
So they didn't waste any space in here. There's a lot of different things you can do. Oh, and it's got a third flipper up at the top that's got a volcano shot. It's got two more shots you can only make from that upper flipper.
Exactly, yeah. It's kind of like, there's two shots kind of like on Tron where you can hit two shots off that upper flipper. Uh-huh.
Which is really cool. It's got two video modes. One of them you're just kind of selecting caves to go in, and it'll show you five caves and three caves and two caves or whatever, and you're trying to find diamonds, the blood diamonds, you know.
Yeah.
There's a separate leaderboard for the most diamonds collected. But then another video mode, which is a little more difficult to get, is you're kind of on a raft going down the river, and there's rocks and hippos and stuff in the way, so you're trying to dodge them. Similar to the space shuttle simulation. Star Trek Next Generation.
With the shuttle.
But, I don't know. I couldn't get it very often, but it was always kind of fun to get. It was really cool. And then when you're going through the caves, a lot of times you get attacked by gorillas or snakes, so it seemed to change, not a whole lot, but you couldn't just go the same path every time and always get the five diamonds.
Right. Now, this is one of those games that I've never had a chance to have anyone near me own it, but I always play it at shows or whatever I get a chance. And at Rocky Mountain Pinball Showdown, it was a nice, clean, fast-playing machine that had the color DMD with the Sigma display, and that was really cool. But this is a game where I've never really understood the rules that deeply. So what's your basic, aside from collecting the diamonds, what are you ultimately trying to do?
Well, this is the game where I was always just like, you're just going for a high score. When people would come by, what am I supposed to do? There's no, like, wizard mode in it. There's not a real big end game. You're lighting different modes, and they're generally fairly short. So, for me, I was just always chasing high scores.
Which is pretty much kind of a Trudeau, kind of a trope, you know? Creature from the Black Lagoon's sort of the same way. It's like, get the modes, get the multi-balls, get the jackpots. But the end game itself is just more points, you know?
So. Yeah. The mystery is always fun. You get different multi-balls from there. I don't know. Defeating the Gray Gorilla. You collect the mystery award by spelling the word Zinj, basically by lighting the four in lanes, the two in lanes, two out lanes. I don't know. It's pretty basic. It's just a fun game. You just go and you have a good time. I don't think they dropped a lot of time or money into it, so what they got out of it was really great.
Yeah, I agree with that fully. And, you know, it's just one of those games that is just extremely unique, and I think for the price they go, it's a heck of a deal. It's just finding them is the hardest part. But great value game. One of the best, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. It's also got a Midnight Madness mode. You don't see a whole lot, but if when the clock inside the game hits midnight, it kind of turns off, and I think every shot, it's been a while since I played Midnight Madness, but I think every shot was like 5 million points or something, or 60 seconds or something.
I didn't even know about that. That's cool.
Yeah, I set it so 4 in the afternoon it would hit midnight, and so I'd see it every once in a while. It's pretty cool.
That's not midnight, Don.
Well, you know what? I've got children. I can't play at midnight.
You didn't when you owned the game, though.
You know, I'm old.
Yeah, okay, I'll take that. But very cool. All right, things to look out for on this. What do you...
Things to look out for. A lot of times the up kicker, there's like, it kind of has like a really tall scoop in the middle of a volcano, and if the top of it's broken off, it'll just keep shooting up and down, up and down, up and down. It'll never get out of the volcano. Or it'll shoot all the way into the glass. I've heard of that happening before, too. So you want to make sure that you can get replacements from Mantis, but you want to make sure that the upkicker kind of works. They don't make replacement volcanoes, and those are almost always broken because they're really thin plastic. They're always cracked and chipped. I'm trying to think of if there are any other kind of heavy areas. I remember there being a lot of wear. Even the scoops, the way they were designed, they didn't get, you know, too dinged up. The ones I've seen. A lot of times the gray gorilla will break. He's on kind of a pivot, and the weld will break. It was kind of a weak weld. So on mine, I had my dad beef up the weld quite a bit, and he didn't break. I've heard of guys using gorilla glue on it. I did that when I first got it, and it lasted for a little while, but it was always kind of a little bit loose. So definitely something you want to make sure. The targets for the... What is it called? Travel link or whatever? Skylink? Let me see. Satellite transfer. And the Congo spelling of Grey Gorilla on the mini playfield, you can't find those targets. Which drove me nuts because they're always kind of beat up because the satellite transfer targets are right in the top center of the playfield. Basically where the castle would be in Medieval Madness. So right. They're getting pounded all the time. And the other ones are 8 inches away from the gorilla. So they're real close to the gorilla. So they get pounded. And if those targets are off, if one of them isn't quite working, you're never going to spell Congo. So you just got to kind of make the best out of them.
Yeah, several things to look for there. And, well, you don't have to say what you paid for yours or sold yours for, but...
No, I don't care.
What about value on this game? Fair price?
For me, I traded mine. I traded my No Fear for it when I picked it up. And then I added quite a bit of stuff and sold it. But, Oh, no, I didn't. Did I sell it or trade it? No, I traded it for T2.
Okay.
So I'd say a beat-up one is you're maybe looking at between 12 and 16. A really nice one could go up to 2, maybe even 22, 2400.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of... Collectors are kind of coming into it more, so it's got a really wide spread.
You know. Yeah. Especially with those issues you mentioned, like with the volcano. I'm sure a pristine volcano would spike the price on an individual one noticeably.
If you can find one, yeah. Yeah, a lot of the parts just to make it playable are out there, but I spent quite a bit just getting the game in good shape.
Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah, I mean, I don't have much else to say about it because I haven't owned one. I think you're fairly lucky to have had one for as long as you did. I think that's a very cool game. I'd pick one up for sure, though, given the chance at a fair price on one.
It's a ton of fun, and it's a real crowd pleaser. My niece, every time she comes over, monkey game, where's the monkey game? She's 3 now, and so she understands that it's gone, but, you know, for 2 years there, monkey game, where's the monkey game? So, yeah, it's a very cool game.
All right,
let's get it. I wonder how cheap the license is. Maybe we can get it on the Pinball Arcade someday.
Maybe. I doubt it's that in demand on the license. So.
Yeah, probably not. Okay, well, that's a fun game to do. And that brings us to the virtual table. Since we just talked about Pinball Arcade, we'll mention Champion Pub and Whirlwind are coming to the Pinball Arcade any day now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty cool. I saw some pictures of the Champion Pub, and that's one of my favorite games as far as the light show goes. I love when all the lights turn out and you got your health bars and all that. So it looked pretty cool from the pictures, so we'll see how it goes. And Whirlwind is a classic.
Yeah. It's always, I think, great. Both should work well digitally.
Yeah. And I also wanted to mention Pinball Rocks has been getting a lot of press lately. It's a licensed pinball game. It's on iOS right now, but you can buy different tables. There's an AC/DC table, a Slayer, Bullet for My Valentine, and Alice in Chains.
Uh-huh.
And there's just a generic rock one. So I bought the Alice in Chains one just to try it out, and I actually thought it kind of sucks.
Is it a physics issue? Is it a design issue? Or
it's design. The physics aren't bad. The graphics aren't bad. The layout, there's no shots. Even like the in lanes will light up to spell something, but pushing the flipper buttons doesn't move the light so that you can light all the lanes.
Uh-huh.
But there's like mini playfields. There's kind of a Wizard of Oz, Dorothy's House mini playfield where you hit, I think it's like a jar or something. No, it's the jar of flies. You're hitting the ball up to hit the jar. And it's you have to hit it 10 times, and it's almost impossible for the ball to drain. So it's just kind of repetitive. You're hitting it. Meanwhile, the ramp shot's very difficult to hit, and you just keep ending up in the jar of flies, the little mini playfield. And there's another one on the other side. I forget what it is. But they're just really boring. You just keep getting in these really boring areas. It's just totally... like, they need to play some... Zen Pinball to get some better ideas.
About original stuff. Yeah. So, musically, I mean, since these are kind of around music, are they kind of like AC/DC where they're integrated into the play, or are they kind of more like Metallica where it's kind of playing as just the soundtrack to what you're doing?
It's just a soundtrack. And you can buy different songs. I think on the free table or the original table, it just plays... they're licensed songs. I know Chevelle's on there and Red and a couple other bands. But you can buy, like, AC/DC songs if you don't want to buy the AC/DC table. Each table is $3, and you get, I don't know, maybe 5 songs or so by that band.
Okay.
But, yeah, they just play.
Huh.
And then there's cheats. Getting an extra ball and getting multi-ball are cheats. And you have to, it's like pay-to-play. You have to buy a pack of 5 extra balls for $1 or something.
Ah.
Or buy multi-ball for, I don't know, $1 for 3 playthroughs or something. Yeah, it's like a cash grab. It's got potential to be awesome, but it's just not happening. The rules just suck. They're terrible.
That's a shame.
If anybody's played one of the other tables and then it's actually decent, let me know. I played the one that comes with it in Alice in Chains, and they both sucked. So, anyway. It sounds like it's made by Sony, so I figured it'd be coming to PlayStation and stuff, but right now it's just iOS.
Okay.
Cool. Okay, yeah, it's very exciting.
Well, no, I mean, I saw it, you know, floating around. I saw pictures of it, and I was interested, but just hadn't had a chance to really look into it.
So. Yeah, you're not missing anything. We had a quick location report, and I posted it up on our website, but Dan Fenton was out at Pinball A-Go-Go, I guess about 2 weeks ago. And so he gave us a quick rundown. He said there was about 236 games, which is gigantic. That's a ton of games. They had the EM games in kind of their own little room. And they said that even like Wizard of Oz and Metallica, the lines only got to about 6 people deep. They had 2 Monster Madness, 2 Monster Bash, 3 Attack from Mars, etc. So there's a ton of A-list games. They had Doug Watson there signing, and he had kind of his own little area. Jersey Jack was there. Yeah, he said it was a lot of fun and definitely worth stopping by. I didn't realize Pinball A-Go-Go was so big, or Pin-A-Go-Go.
Yeah, man, that's 236 machines. That's incredible.
That's enormous.
That's why the lines are short, just because they're easy to spread people out across that many machines. So.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you, Dan, for that. And if you guys have hit any of the other tournaments or conventions that we haven't made it out to, and you want to put together something, write a little article, or even just give us a heads up on what you thought, let us know, and we'll talk about it on the next show. So, Jeff, you've got a product review to talk about?
Yeah, this will be real quick. I ordered some of the AC/DC protectors from, if you go on to Pinside and just kind of search AC/DC protector, you'll find a thread that is about, there's a few different ones. There's some stand-up target protectors, there's the bell protector, and the jukebox protector. I got the drop targets one, and it's pretty easy to install. You do have to drill one little pilot hole to get it in there, but once you've installed it, it's great. I mean, it's not a cliffy one, so I know a lot of people sometimes are wary about non-cliffy or mantis protectors just because they don't know, but the guys who are doing these protectors have been, you know, putting out new revisions of the product, constantly improving it. The order process is easy. Just send them some PayPal money. They'll take care of it. And they look nice. They have a really good fit. The seller's name on Pinside is Pin Protection. There's just a dash between Pin and Protection there. And like I said, really snug fit. Works great. And if you're going to buy an AC/DC premium, I would definitely get the drop target protectors, because as much side-to-side play as there is in that game, they're going to take plenty of hits. So, solid product. I want to get the bell and jukebox protectors as well. I haven't got those yet, but I will be ordering them now that I've seen how well these other ones work. So, good product. Easy install. Again, you do have to drill a small hole, but not a big deal. And so, well worth the effort to get your stuff protected better.
Where does it fit in? On the top of the playfield, or does it protect the holes around it?
The one I ordered for the drop targets, goes underneath the playfield, like under the AC/DC drop targets. There's a slot there, mm-hmm. Where they drop, obviously, and it just fits in right behind the drop targets in the slot. And there's just a couple of holes that you're gonna have to drill for it, but yeah, you mount it from the bottom of the playfield. So
okay,
when you order them, he sends you some installation pictures, and I don't think there's any reason why we couldn't post those. So I'll get them to you, and we can post them on the site.
And what does a bell have to be protected by? It's a, you know, it's a bash toy, right?
From what I understand, hold on, let me see. I'll go ahead and see how they described it. Because I haven't ordered that, but the bell actually has... Let's see here.
Or the jukebox. Does the ball, like, fly up back there?
One of them is for the jukebox. And that one, obviously, you know, when you plunge it, it goes into the jukebox. And so that one, again, is for just protecting wear around it. Now, the bell, I think that one is on the pros, right? Where... the bell doesn't swing, but it has a little saucer there.
Oh, okay.
So, but I do think it works. I think the premiums do as well. I always just hit it. I know if it can pass through, but I've never had an issue with it.
So it has a saucer protector or something?
Let me double check on the thread, because I didn't order that one. I ordered the drop target stuff. So,
but well, you're. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, we'll just put the link to the Pinside thread.
Okay. If anyone's
interested. I know with AC/DC, there's a ton of new owners right now, so they'll be looking at it. It's $33 for the set. That's with shipping included if you're in the lower 48. So, yeah, so basically, but it's for only 20 for the pro model, since they have less to protect, I guess I should say.
So. Well, Lod Z.
Yeah.
Why are you ripping on the pro model? Has anybody played a pro model?
I know some of our listeners own some pros. I've heard some talk about that. So, plays, I guess, even faster than the premium, because you don't have drop targets. So you're getting harder bounces, and you don't have any lower play field.
I'd like to try one of them.
I would like to play one, because it's definitely going to have a different feel to it. So,
yeah. I wanted to mention, I noticed on Metallica that from the factory on the Pro, it comes with kind of a cliffy right in front of the snake.
Yeah, it does.
Kind of covering protecting his bottom lip. I know there's been talk about making braces, like snake braces for his fangs, because those will break off. I don't know what they're doing about that.
It's kind
of cool that they're adding protectors from the factory.
I think you're going to just end up with a lot of broken teeth snakes. And it doesn't look terrible, but it is unfortunate. But I don't think that there's a whole lot that can be done about that, honestly. Unless they change it to, like, a soft rubber that will flex. Because as long as it's a hard plastic, it's just going to take shots and it's going to go down. And I mean, that's a bummer, but it's not really the end of the world from what I can tell. So,
and I talked to Cliffy yesterday, and he's actually working on Metallica Cliffy's right now, and Pinbits is working on plastic protectors. So a lot of people have been requesting those.
Yeah, I mean, the orders seem to have been going through the roof on both the Pros premiums and we know LEs, so it's nice that it's a hit right off the bat, so those protectors and stuff are going to be there right from the beginning.
Yeah, it's nice that they're, bam, right on the ball. I was surprised when, like, the X-Men protectors came out. I was like, man, the game just came out. But
yep.
Good on them.
Vendors have been on top of it, so. Yeah, so I guess what I was saying is, with the AC/DC, it's for the jukebox and then the saucer behind the bell. So that's what the two are. Okay. I ordered the drop target protectors, so.
Cool.
Different set.
I'll check it out. I'm a big proponent of protectors as far as, even if it's gam, not going to keep, I like to put the other protectors on just so it gets a little bit longer legs out there, whoever ends up with it next.
Yeah.
Keep the games around a little longer. And I realize not everybody wants to or cares, but.
Now, this is an extremely important question.
Yes, sir.
If you got a new in-box game, are you peeling off the Made in USA sticker, or are you leaving it?
I'll leave it.
Yeah, I've left mine, so. Both my Tron and AC/DC have them, so.
I'm a patriot.
I know, I love the USA.
Yeah. Speaking of which, my CSI doesn't have one. What's up with that?
I don't know.
That's suspect.
I don't know. Maybe the CSI guys are just kind of un-American.
Is that on that Pinside thread of Pinball First Stern game with the Made in USA decal?
I haven't looked, but is CSI the first?
No, I have no idea.
I'm
curious. I was just kind of making fun of it. Thanks for calling me out on that little joke there. See, well, this we'll seems like out. A really bad podcast. Maybe this will be a really good one.
Well, yeah, we've got lots to talk about and we effed up next month, huh?
Yeah. We'll have a special episode in a week. Just on all the we have subs. We had some awesome feedback this month.
Yes.
Really good questions that I wish I had thought of. They're that good. I don't know, Ben. We didn't talk about it at all beforehand, so this segment is probably going to be terrible, but we'll muscle through anyway. Taylor Reese had a question for us. He posted on Facebook that he wants us to discuss our feelings on the importance of theme. His feeling is that newer guys kind of put too much weight into the theme, so they miss out on playing some great pins. We kind of talked a little bit about Bram Stoker's Dracula as a case where the theme was a dog for a long time, so people just kind of blew it off.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I have a definite opinion on this, so I don't know if you want me to just, bam, break it out. I think he's right. New guys do kind of, you know, you're new to pinball, you're like, hey, I like Pirates of the Caribbean, so I want to play that game. Or, hey, Twilight Zone, that show sucks, it's not even in color, I'm not even going to play that. You know, my wife and I, neither one of us care about theme for the most part. So, like, a lot of our games, like Roadshow, I hate country music. I'm not into truck driving at all. And World Cup Soccer, I'm not into soccer at all. But something like The Simpsons, I think if that theme was Friends, I probably would not be as much fun. You know, The Simpsons, the theme is so well integrated into that particular game, I think it's important. But in general, no, theme doesn't mean anything to me. Something like Tron, a lot of people say Tron is kind of a backwards Funhouse. And while Tron is a game I love to own, Funhouse was a game I owned and I was cool with selling pretty quickly. So Tron kind of, it's so pretty. The theme, again, just like the whole thing just seethes. I don't know, like this beautiful electronic, I don't know, the theme just pours out of it. And that's really attractive to me as a fan of the theme. So sometimes I am a sucker, I'm a fanboy for the theme, but in general I would say play every pin, even if something like Shrek where you don't like it, you don't care about the theme, just give it a shot anyway. Johnny Mnemonic's a great one. Rescue 911. Okay, well, that one kind of sucks either way.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering where you're going to go with that.
Yeah, where was I going to go with that one? Batman? Like, the old Batman games, I think, suck. But, Batman's awesome, so...
Yeah, and Batman Forever was kind of the starting the real hard downward trend of Batman movies. But the game's a lot of fun.
Game's cool, yeah.
Well, so, my thoughts on the whole theme thing is there's not a theme that would keep me from playing a game or playing a game even regularly, but there are certain themes that would keep me from owning a game. So... I guess I fall somewhere in the middle. I don't think that it's really going to affect the enjoyability of a game. But when you're talking about spending, $4,500 to $6,500 for something that's going to sit in your house, I think in that instance, theme is going to matter a little bit more to you. There's themes that I guess could be considered harmless. For example, now we know that Addams Family is a great game. It might be a really weird theme for some people. Some people may hate the Addams Family, but they're going to own the pinball machine because it's just generally a harmless theme. Like, yeah, I'm not a fan of the Addams Family, but the game's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Now, if you take something like Playboy, even if the game's fantastic, you're going to have a lot of people just find it flat out offensive, and they won't have that in their home. I wouldn't put a Playboy in my house for that reason. I've got little kids and stuff, and I don't think it would go over too well with the wife and the neighbors who bring their little kids over as well. So in that instance, the theme is a full-on just stop sign for me. If I'm on location, sure, I'll play it. But would I put it in my home? No. And I think it just comes down to whether the theme can be viewed as offensive rather than kind of something you're just not into, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely.
But no, it wouldn't stop me from playing a game.
If you look at the games that are being produced right now, you've got Wizard of Oz and Metallica on the assembly lines. You couldn't get two more different themes than those.
Yeah, pretty polarizing.
But, a lot of people are out there, oh, both games are great. I like Metallica as a theme. I like Wizard of Oz as a game. My biggest pet peeve, I guess, or annoyance with Wizard of Oz so far is the soundtrack. I'm a huge Chris Graner fan, but that I'm already like, oh Lord, I'm gonna have to turn some Metallica on in the background while I'm playing Wizard of Oz just to drown that thing out.
So yeah, and it's interesting because my dad, he says he's ready to buy another pinball machine, and he loves the Wizard of Oz theme, really likes the old movie, but the soundtrack has given him pause, so he's waiting till they're out to decide. Yeah. If there's going to be a variation for him, so. And Metallica is something you would never even entertain. Like, that, not a hypothetical that you could even bring up with him. He'd just be saying no, flat out. So
good question. A lot of people, they want their sci-fi room, so they'll have a Lost in Space next to a Demolition Man, next to a Twilight Zone.
And a Starship Troopers.
And a Starship Troopers, which is actually a pretty cool game. We should do a Starship Troopers meets Independence Day mashup sometime. A head-to-head battle. I haven't played either one in a couple of years, though. Anyway, yeah, so theme, I don't think it matters a whole lot, but I love your point on which game you would own or not. I probably wouldn't own a Playboy either.
Yeah. So.
And Metallica's got a...
You can't hide that under the bed, so...
No, that's true.
Doesn't fit under the mattress.
No. Metallica's got the SH word and the F word in it. Which I think Sopranos did.
Yeah, making me family mode it out, though.
Yeah, it just made me think of, like, how many games have had that offensive of adult mode. I know No Good Gophers had rude and very rude modes. I could never tell the difference between them.
ACDC drops a few as well. Like, Steve Ritchie's call-outs at times. If you get a huge bonus, he'll let you know how impressed he is with you with colorful language. So, or disappointed with you. So yeah, that made its way into AC/DC as well. But again, you can family mode some of that out. The whole lot of Rosie animation can't be family moded out. And I've known I've seen on Pinside some people have avoided the game or outright sold it because of that.
That really surprised me, actually.
Yeah.
We had one on Family Mode, and I was shocked when I saw that it was still in there.
Yeah. That one, you think they would have just cropped in on her kind of head bobbing thing and left it at that, so.
And the car rocking thing is always in there.
Yeah.
I don't know what song that's on, but.
Yeah, I guess those are probably kind of the top as far as
a match offense. Mode.
I guess Family Guy's pretty offensive if you don't Family Mode that game. Not to the same degree, but you have a sperm attack mode, and I think a lot of parents might raise an eyebrow at that.
It's a way to open the door for that conversation. A lot of people, a lot of parents have a tough time breaking the seal on that one.
They do.
Yeah. a listener named... I'm sorry. I skipped right over one of the other ones. Current Game Room Junkies co-host Juan Justino had a question for us. He said he'd like to hear more about price guides or the best methods to determine what is a fair pin price for us noobs. He did a whole section on the last Game Room Junkies podcast, which was actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, cool story.
Worth a look. Yeah. So this is a great question. A lot of people, when you first get into the hobby, I know first thing I did was I got a Mr. Pinball price guide. So that's kind of the big name. You can find them on Pin Game Journal. You can find them pretty much everywhere. They're about $25, and they come out every year. Pinball machines change in price so much lately. I get them every other year just because I like to read them and kind of have them around, but I definitely don't buy them every year. When I go to buy a game, I check Pinpedia first. That's kind of my go-to.
Yeah, and you can go to eBay and check recently completed auctions and see what stuff is sold for. Now, eBay prices generally are a little bit higher than what you'll get, you know, collector to collector. So you can kind of use that as a kind of a basis of what, you know, people are paying for on the wider market. Just know you can do a little bit better when you're dealing with other people. So directly.
That's what Pinpedia does. It shows you recent auctions. Yeah. But it'll go back forever. I mean, a couple of years. Boston Pinball gets a lot of press, but I've never found that it's very accurate. Same with Pinside. People are always quote Pinside prices, and they seem to be weird. They're always weird.
Yeah, they're
funky. I don't know where they come from.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, I agree with you. Pinpedia is probably the best way to go. Just know that you can always haggle down in most instances, but nobody likes a lowballer. So.
No. I'll look for a beat-up game, and then I'll look for a new in-box game if I can, or, you know, at least a good playing game, and kind of make up my own mind. And the more you deal with pins and, you know, trolling Craigslist and this and that, the more you get a feel for what they should go for. Even games you don't care about. you just kind of become second nature.
Yep.
And it's very, very subjective. When you get up to a game, you know, it could be a 50-cent fix, it could be a $500 fix, and it could be over your head, and you got to call in troops. You might never fix it and have to sell it at a loss. So it's a bit of a crapshoot, but I'd say Pinpedia is a great place to start.
Yep.
Cool.
I agree. Yeah, that's all I have on that. So.
Or
just call Don. I'll post a cell phone number.
I never answer it anyway, so that's fine.
He'll call you back.
A listener named Adam sent us a gameplay video of Metallica Pro running 1.06, which was awesome, but it's now like on 1.13 or something. So I should have shared it right when he sent it, and I'm a jerk and didn't. But thank you so much for sending that. I really appreciate it. I did want to point out that the pop bumpers are kind of interesting in that they score individually. I don't know if you noticed that. Each pop bumper, I think they start out needing 10 hits or something. Well, maybe the far right pump bumper might get 10 hits before the other two, and then that one goes up in value on its own.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I can't believe I haven't seen that before. I'm sure there are pins, and we'll get that in the WeFed Up section. And the pins have done that, but I have never seen it. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, really cool.
Kevin sent us a message. He likes the show, which we love to hear. He's new to pinball, and so he wants to spend more time talking about the pinball arcade. We get a lot of requests for this. The pinball arcade is bringing a lot of new blood into pinball, so we've been trying to spend more time talking about it, and it's something we both are passionate about. I'm always excited when I see the update. I know a lot of the guys don't care about virtual pinball, but but we do.
Yeah, so. And I guess when those new tables are out for this next pack, we'll go into them a little bit more detail. I will say on this last pack that Centaur played a lot more enjoyably than I thought it would, so I think they nailed it on that one. I thought Centaurs were really quite a bit of fun in that pack. So.
I feel like I'm always kind of behind because I like to get them on the PS3 and play them on my Vita, even though, as Joe Zenkis pointed out, no one owns a Vita because he's a jerk. I love my Vita, and I play the hell out of it.
I have a Vita, and I almost never play it. Yeah. Persona 4 was the last game I played. So.
I saw you had something under a stack of untouched Vita games or something you forgot about.
Yeah.
I love my Vita, but and Pinball Arcade is awesome on there, and it's crossplay, so you buy it for the PS3, you get it on the Vita as well, and on the PS4. Anyway, yeah, we'll keep talking about Pinball Arcade. That's not going anywhere. Speaking of Joe Zenkis, one of our most faithful listeners, he sent us a friggin' novel, but a couple things, which is awesome. I thought it was great. I replied to him in an email, but he wants to hear more about the pinball designers that we talked about. A couple things about George Gomez, what we just talked about, was, you know, we didn't really get into that he had designed the original Tron game or Spy Hunter or even the reboot of Spy Hunter that kind of didn't go anywhere. They released the game, but not the movie, even though it starred The Rock. The game starred The Rock.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. So,
The Rock will do anything these days.
Apparently. That would have been a cool movie. I loved the PS2 versions of Spy Hunter. So, thanks, George Gomez. Yeah, George Gomez makes a lot of great games.
I have the original arcade game. I love it. One of my favorites.
Yeah. Classic. And Jeff, maybe you want to talk about this. You threw it out there that we were talking about doing video show segments.
Yeah. That I wanted to gauge interest on that before I put my awkward self on camera, and I'm committed to doing that. Now, there's lots of ways we could go about producing these. Some of them could just be walkthroughs on games. Maybe we talk about the game of the month, and if it's one we own, we can go into more depth of video later and post it between episodes. Essentially, I think it'd be kind of cool to just get some more content rolled out between shows. One thing that I thought would be kind of fun would be to video like an attempt at a certain challenge. Like, for example, might take a poll like, in what way do you want to, you know, punish Jeff this month? Do you want me to play until I get to portal mode on Tron and I can make all the cuts of every drain I had on the way or whatever? I mean, it could be a lot of work, but it could be a lot of fun. And it'd probably be funny because I don't see Portal very often on Tron. So anyway, things like that. There's a lot of stuff we could do. If you guys have ideas about what kind of video content you'd want to see, we did get some ideas in the original Facebook post, but we'd love to hear more. Essentially, it's just, hey, if there's something you guys want to see, we'll do it. I used to post a lot of repair videos for arcade and pinball machines under a different YouTube account. We don't need to talk about it because they're embarrassing. But I can get back to some of those, like, hey, how to drill a lock, or, you know, how to do, you know, certain fixes, all sorts of little things like that that we've talked about but we haven't really demonstrated.
How to drill a lock? How to make fake IDs?
No. Yeah,
how to
slip
a roofie?
Yeah, very, very important stuff for pinball ownership. So.
Okay. Yeah. I actually shot a video the other day of a drop target repair on Meteor. But it was pretty bad, so I decided not to post it. And I forgot to do it in panorama view or whatever. So I did I held my iPhone the wrong direction. I know people love that.
Yeah.
But I'm cool with the shotgun approach. Yeah. Here's this repair. Here's what we're doing.
Yeah, so we'll start just, you know, getting some stuff out and refine it based on feedback. So
there you go. Another Joe Zenkis request is to talk about the Stern, what do they call it? It's like the pinball browser for editing Stern ROMs. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I have. It's pretty cool what people are doing with it already.
It's nuts. This guy on Pinside, his name's Oga83 or OGA83 or something. Anyway, he basically came up with a software where you can mess with the firmware or the ROMs on modern Stern games. Like all kinds of stuff. Like people were taking out like the Unforgiven on Metallica and putting in some other song. Same with AC/DC. They took out four songs and added four songs. And then they changed the text on the DMD. Somebody changed and added characters to X-Men. It's just free software. I don't know how happy Stern is with it or if they care. Hopefully they don't care.
I don't think they'll care as long as you're editing your own stuff and then you're not selling it as ROM updates. But, I mean, yeah, it's pretty cool. People changing the Stern logo to say their name or something like that. Little simple things to that, like you said, and then just straight-up game-altering stuff. So it was really cool.
It's very, very cool. We'll post the thread. You guys got to check it out. I'm not enough of a computer guy to be able to do any of this. But the possibilities are endless. Whenever we complain about, oh, yeah, they never finished Wheel of Fortune or CSI or whatever, now somebody can finish it. And Stern was behind their finishing that Data East Star Wars, so maybe if somebody makes a really good one, Stern will throw it on their site.
Yep. And, like, one of the things I saw is people are adding, you know, to Tron, they were adding more of Jem when it shows her animation to either slow it down or add more to it. But yeah, it's kind of cool. So
they were adding animations, like from the film?
Extending animations, or there's a lot of, they're finding when they get into these games, there's a ton of unused audio clips or even video clips, and they're finding ways to integrate those into the game, which is pretty neat.
Cool. Awesome, man. Yeah, the possibilities are endless. If you guys hear of a good ROM or something, let us know. I'm sure, I mean, I'll be watching this thread like a hawk from now on, but man, it's so cool. We forgot about iTunes reviews. I kind of forgot about it totally, but we got a couple new reviews. A listener named DaHawk007 left us a review. He's talking about how, you know, he likes hearing about repairs and collection updates. He says there's very little pinball action here in Iowa, so it's nice hearing about stuff around the country. If you're a pinball guy in Iowa, let us know. Maybe we can get in touch with this DaHawk guy. We'll post your thing so he can find you.
Yeah, there's a really active Twitter user, the Iowa Pinball on Twitter. I can give you his exact ID because I follow him. Let me...
Maybe that's what I was thinking of because I remembered something Iowa.
It's just Iowa Pinball. It's he's extremely active on Twitter, so it's just at Iowa Pinball. So if you don't follow him already, do so.
Check him out.
Post lots of pictures, things going on in Iowa. So, yeah, definitely check him out.
And this doesn't just have to do with Iowa. If you're in a place where there's not that much pinball action, you know, look online. Or let us know, and maybe we can put the word out and bring people together.
Yep. And he does. He also has a website. It's iowapinballclub.com. So.
Sweet. So there you go. So, DaHawk, I hope that helps you out a little bit. And then way back 3 months ago, JCat56 left us a message. So thank you. Sorry we totally neglected you. I guess we don't get that many reviews. It's been three months. He's rolling to virtual pinball right now, and so he appreciates that we talk about it. But he also likes that we talk about real-world pinball. I think I always say when people are complaining about this game or that, pinball's pinball, so I don't really care. We like to complain, you know, here or there. But if there's a South Park out on location, I'm still going to drop a couple quarters in it
and then walk away
and whatever needs to be done. I'll flip a ball around. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know.
But something that he mentions, I put this on Facebook the other day. I tried listening to Giant Bombcast again. I think you're a listener. I know pretty much everyone on earth listens to Giant Bombcast.
We'll talk about it after the show because you need to be set straight.
I have 45 minutes in. They still hadn't talked about any video games, but they were talking about the films of Tom Hanks in the 80s. as JCat points out, I have no interest in knowing what the host's favorite ice cream flavor is or how their wife just got a speeding ticket. There's enough of that crap on TV. We just we stay on topic, even if it's personal stuff. That's something that our very first show we discussed. Let's stay on topic. So yeah. I think for the most part, we just talked pinball.
We realize we're not funny or interesting.
So. No, that's true. We're pretty dry and boring. Yeah. But there's plenty of interesting podcasts out there if you want something like that. I don't know why you would. But as Josh at the Pinball, what is it? Pinball Soul points out, he listens to the podcast as he goes to sleep. So thanks for that glowing review, Josh.
Oh, really we probably helped him get a lot of really quick.
Thanks,
quick,
bud. Yeah, hard easy day at path. Work, throw on the pinball podcast.
Yep.
Anyway, no, we love doing the show. So anyway, you can always leave us iTunes reviews. We really appreciate it. Right now, we're the number one thing that comes up if you search for pinball podcast, mostly due to our incredibly creative name. So we don't need a whole lot of pushing, I guess. But
And like I said, that was a product of my internet marketing mind.
SEO That's mind, brilliant. Whatever, so. Yes.
And general lack of creativity when it comes to this stuff. But, hey.
That's all right. Show number one, Jeff's like, hey, what do you want to call it? How about the Pinball Podcast? Yeah, that sounds fine.
By the way, we're also on Stitcher now. I forgot to mention that. We were last episode as well, but we're there.
So. Somebody say Skitchin?
Stitcher Radio.
Oh, Stitcher.
Skitchin was a terrible Genesis
game. Fantastic game. I dumped hundreds of hours into that game.
That was so bad.
That needs a reboot. Oh, Jet Grind Radio just didn't do it for me.
No. Don't say Skitchin was better than Jet Grind, because off topic.
I don't need to say it. Everyone knows.
Yeah, you probably like Jam It, too.
No, I was not a Jam It fan. I'm a Hang Time fan all day.
There we go. Okay, we agree there.
All right. Okay. Have we punished everyone, including ourselves enough?
Man, I'm kind of disturbed we both knew Skitchin, so.
Dude, I have a copy. I love Skitchin. I'm not joking, man.
Okay. Yeah, let's close it out before we hurt anybody mentally. So, twitter.com/pinballpodcast. We're there. Tweet at us.
That's a thing.
Facebook.com/pinballpodcast. We're there. Like us.
We have almost 200 likes right now.
I know.
That sounds like a lot. I don't know. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean. Email is pinballpodcast@gmail.com, and website's thepinballpodcast.com. So, yeah, please interact with us.
Yeah, and join us next month when we review Crew Ball.
No.
No?
Well, whatever.
I'm sure. I got a copy around here somewhere.
We're going to talk about Skitchin next episode.
With Metallica and AC/DC out, you got to talk about Crew Ball. All right.
All right. By the way, shout out to Game Exchange, because, again, that's where I bought my AC/DC, but I talked to him a little bit about Metallica prices. I'm not going to say him here, because I don't know if he get in trouble or not, but he's got good pricing on both the pro and the premiums. So talk to him. He'll hook a brother up. Or a sister.
Say them to me in a couple minutes.
Yeah, I will.
Okay. So. All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening. Without this, we'd be a shell of a man.
We are anyway.
So. Yeah, that's true.
Whatever.
Okay.
All right. Bye.